So the reading is taken from Ruth chapter 4, verses 1 to 12. And it's on page 269 of the Church Bibles. It may or may not be behind me. Ruth chapter 4. Meanwhile, Boaz went up to the town gate and sat there. When the kinsman redeemer he had mentioned came along, Boaz said, "Come over here, my friend, and sit down." So he went over there and sat down. Boaz took 10 of the elders of the town and said, "Sit here," and they did so. Then he said to the kinsman redeemer, "Naomi, who has come from Moab, is selling the piece of land that belonged to our brother Elimelech. I thought I should bring the matter to your attention and suggest that you should buy it in the presence of these seated here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, do so. But if you will not, tell me so that I will know. For no one has the right to do except you, and I am next in line." "I will redeem it," he said. Then Boaz said, "On the next day, you buy the land for Naomi and from Ruth, the Moabess. You acquire the dead man's widow in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property." At this, the kinsman redeemer said, "Then I cannot redeem it, because I might endanger my own estate. You will redeem it yourself. I cannot do it." Now, in earlier times in Israel, for the redemption and transfer of property to become final, one party took off his sandal and gave it to the other. This was the method of legalizing transactions in Israel. So the kinsman redeemer said to Boaz, "Buy it yourself." And he removed his sandal. Then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people, "Today you are witnesses that I've bought from Naomi all the property from Elimelech, Chilion and Mahlon. I've also acquired Ruth the Moabess, Mahlon's widow, as my wife, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from the town records. Today you are witnesses." Then the elders and all those at the gate said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. May you have standing in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. Through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah." This is the word of the Lord.
Great, thank you, Simon. So this is our final sermon on Ruth. Next week we're looking at some of the stories that Jesus told. We're going to be doing a few of those. Who has been here for every single Ruth sermon? Put your hand up. So those are the people at the quiz at the end. You want to be... No, don't worry, it's not going to be a quiz. Okay, so because it's been summer, lots of us have been kind of in different places. So I'm going to do another quick run through of Ruth, but not in musical form, just so we can kind of understand a little bit about what's going on. That's a word cloud of Ruth. Have you ever used word clouds? They kind of, you type in a passage and all the kind of most used words come up. I just thought that was interesting. Maybe that's just me. Okay, so for those of you who've missed it or are none the wiser from the video, here is what's been going on in Ruth. So Naomi, who is Ruth's mother-in-law, is a widow. She's from Israel, but she's living in a country called Moab at the moment. She's lost her husband and she's lost her sons. She's had to escape her homeland because the homeland is in famine. Naomi is having a genuinely terrible time. After a while, she decides to head back to Israel, her homeland. And her daughters-in-law are really important. But she says to them, "Don't worry about me. I'll go by myself." But Ruth said, "No, I'm going to stay with you. I'm going to travel with you. And I'll go leave my country and go to your country because you are so important to me." So they arrive back in Israel. The famine is over, and it's in time for the barley harvest. Ruth and Naomi have nothing at this point. Back in the day, if you didn't have any male relatives around, basically as women, life was not looking great. You relied on them for your income and for your food. So they had to go, and Ruth had to start going into the fields and basically picking up what the workers dropped. She starts doing this in a field belonging to a guy called Boaz, and it just so happens that Boaz is a relative of Naomi's dead husband. Boaz is, in my opinion, just one of the most stand-up guys in the whole Bible, and he takes pity on Naomi. He looks on her with favour, and he says, don't worry about kind of just following around my workers and just picking up what they drop on the floor. You may go into my field and you may have what you like. You may pick your own grains. You may fend for yourself. Boaz is just massively respectful of Ruth. He hears all that she's been doing for Naomi, and he looks with such great favor upon her. That's chapters 1 and 2. Chapter 3 last week, Andy shared with us. But I'm just going to do a little deeper recap, because I think if we miss what's going on in chapter 3, then chapter 4 is just really confusing. So in chapter 3, we see Naomi try to matchmake Boaz and Ruth. We see her draw on kind of romantic love instincts. So Naomi gets Ruth to go and bathe and to put some perfume on and a really lovely dress on, and she sends her to go and lie with Boaz in the night. Naomi wanted marriage for Ruth, and Boaz seemed not only the obvious option, but just the most perfect choice. So Ruth goes to Boaz, and she lies at his feet. They do not sleep together. In that time and culture, if they'd had sex, that would have signalized marriage and sort of consummated a marriage there, but they don't do that. And I'm not clear from reading the text, and I've done quite a lot of reading around that, if kind of that's what Naomi was hoping for, that kind of a quickie marriage, like a good, just quick resolution to their situation. But what it does happen that evening for Boaz and Ruth, it gives them a chance to have a conversation. Ruth speaks to Boaz and asks him to marry her. She asks him to give her protection and to have children with her. Ruth asks Boaz to be her kinsman redeemer, her rescuer, her helper, and all that from lying at the end of his bed. Boaz sees this as, again, an incredibly honourable move on Ruth's part and agrees to marry her. But the issue is that there's another relative who is a closer relative who should sort of get first say on the land and on whether he marries Ruth. So Boaz says, if this guy won't marry you, won't redeem your father-in-law's land, then I will do that. I will step up. That night, Ruth slept at his feet, and nothing happened between them. They both rose before anyone else, and they left each other. Ruth returns home, and Naomi assures Ruth that it will all be sorted quickly. So that's where we got to today. Sorry for the long reminder, but I think with like 8 people in the room having heard the whole of the Ruth series, it's good to just all be on the same page. So that gets us to chapter 4. And chapter 4 starts with a set of incredibly unromantic legal discussions. Certainly unromantic in terms of, you know, putting on a nice dress and perfume from the night before. But actually, what these discussions show is a really deep love, a really deep family-rooted love. And again, to understand this a little bit more, sorry, it's lots of explanation, but I think we need to have a really quick look at the explanation of Old Testament marriage laws, because I found this really confusing this week, so I hope it will help us a little bit. So Genesis 38, you can turn to it now if you want to, or you can read it later, is the story of Tamar. Tamar's husband dies without giving her an heir, without giving her a son, and he leaves several brothers alive after him. And Judah, Tamar's father-in-law, goes and says to one of his sons, so Tamar's brother-in-law, to go and have sexual relations with your brother's wife and fulfill the duty of a brother-in-law to her so that you may raise up a descendant for your brother. And basically what happens in this story, cutting a long story short, is that none of the brothers will sleep with Tamar, and she has to trick one into sleeping with her, making her pregnant, giving her a son to continue her husband's line. Because basically, if your husband died and he had a brother alive who was unmarried, it was the brother's obligation to marry the wife and to give her a son to carry on the dead husband's line. That would have made blind date more complicated, wouldn't it? So they were obliged to marry their sister-in-law to give her a son to carry on the dead brother's line. This sort of was first talked about in Genesis 38, by Deuteronomy 25, it is in the Mosaic law. So Moses made this part of law, that the most important thing was that the family line was continued for the deceased relative. So if a widow had a son with her brother-in-law, it was her dead husband's son. Who is vaguely clear on that? Great, I'm going to take some nods as yes, because it just really confused me this week. I had to like start drawing stick people just to try and understand what's going on. So that's what's going on in chapter 4 with this other relative. And we'll see in a minute what he says. But basically, any son that he'd had with Ruth wouldn't have been his son. It would have been the dead husband's son. That makes life a lot more complicated, doesn't it? So what is going on in chapter 4? We see three things happening in chapter 4. The first is that redemption is coming and has come. The second is that God works for the good. And the third is that nobody is insignificant. So the first one, redemption is coming and has come. When Ruth goes to Boaz, she asks him to marry her. She asks him to redeem her. And on that morning, Boaz sets out to redeem Elimelech's land, so that's Naomi's dead husband's land, and to marry Ruth and to enable her to have a son to carry on the line of her husband. So Boaz goes into the town and he goes through the town gates and he bumps in to the nearest kin of Ruth, which seems to be an amazing coincidence, or maybe it was of God. He walks into this guy and he's like, "We need to chat." So they gather all the leaders of the community down and they hold a public meeting. The public meeting, in complete contrast to the midnight meeting of Boaz and Ruth the night before. Boaz is an honorable guy. All this is done in the light. All this is done in public. So Boaz sits down this relative of Naomi's and he mentions the land to him. He asks him to take their land. Now, it's almost impossible to believe that this is the first time that this man has heard of Naomi and Ruth's plight. It's almost impossible to believe that this is the first he's heard of her return to Bethlehem. It's the first he's heard of her husband's death and the sale of her husband's property. I think, again, Boaz is just being incredibly honourable here. I think he's giving him the benefit of the doubt. Because I think if we read between the lines and we see that the relative isn't named, I think he might be a little bit sneaky. I think he's known that his relatives are around. He's known that he's supposed to step up and help them, and he hasn't done that. That is just my opinion. But I think Boaz has been incredibly gentle with him. And I think he's just really honest and open with him. So he asked this guy, "Would you like to redeem Elimelech's land?" And he asked him in public, so he either has to say yes or no. There could be no trickery behind it. And the guy thinks, "Yeah, okay, I have some land." So he's up for taking the land, and then the more difficult part comes, and Boaz mentions that with the land comes Ruth, who needs a husband and who needs a son to carry on the dead husband's line. And with that, this relative is off. He's done. It will affect his line if he has somebody else's son. Do you see that? It's not just about land, he's happy with that, but when it comes to his line and continuing his name, he's not okay with that. So he goes, he has no part of this, he doesn't want any part of this. So Boaz takes off a sandal and they exchange sandals, a sign that the deal is done. And again, all this is done in public, so everybody is sure of what has happened here. Boaz is installed as Ruth's kinsman redeemer. He redeems the land, he redeems her, and he redeems the son that is to come. So let's just think a little bit more about Boaz. As I said, the most honourable man in the Bible, in my opinion, apart from Jesus. I think if we could all try and be a little bit more like Boaz, I think our lives and our church community would just be amazing. Because he's honouring to Ruth when she turns up in the field, essentially begging. He's honouring to Ruth when she turns up in the middle of the night in her nicest dress and her best smelling perfume. He doesn't take advantage of her. He treats her so beautifully and so well. And even with this kinsman that we think might be a little bit dodgy, certainly he's avoiding taking his responsibility seriously. He is kind and gentle. And for me, Boaz is a foretaste of what we see in our King Jesus. Because Boaz steps into the lives of Ruth and Naomi. He sees them and he sees where they are and he rescues and redeems them from that life that they are stuck in. As I said, without male relatives, the lives of these two women was pretty destitute. They wouldn't have been able to claim the land. They wouldn't have been able to make their own money. They needed a male relative to do that. And Boaz is not okay with seeing these women stuck out on a limb. And do you know what? We worship a God who's not okay with us being stuck out on a limb too. He's not okay with life being over for any of us, like the life was over for Ruth and Naomi. He came that we can have life and have it to the full. He came that we may be redeemed and rescued through him. And in the same way that Boaz shows that deep love for Ruth through those discussions, God and Jesus shows us deep love again through his death and resurrection on the cross. Christ has redeemed us, he has rescued us, he is our kinsman redeemer, the one who brings each of us life. And I wonder what Ruth's life looked like afterwards, knowing that she had been redeemed. And I wonder what our lives look like if we know we have been redeemed too. Do we feel like people who have been given life and given it to the full? And that doesn't mean that everything is happy and rosy and lovely all the time. But actually, it's a deeper assurance. It's a deeper thing of knowing whose we are and who we are. So knowing who has redeemed us, just as Ruth knew Boaz had redeemed her. And knowing whose we are helps us believe this second point, that God works for the good. That's the verse from Romans. And we know it in all things, God works for the good of those who love him. What a difference four chapters of the Bible makes. In Ruth 1, we meet Naomi and Ruth in a really desperate situation. They're lost, they don't have a husband or any children, and they have left their homeland because of famine. But they stick together and they move back and they start making a new life for themselves. And they do it together, and I think sometimes we underestimate that part of the story, although so often the passage is read at weddings, isn't it? So where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God will be my God. And so often we say that at a wedding between two people, but this is not between a couple who are getting married, who are in love. This is between a mother and a daughter-in-law. This is between family. This is about community. And so often community is just incredibly important in our Christian journeys and our Christian walks, but I think sometimes we forget. It's not an add-on. It's not just one of those things that, oh, wasn't it lovely that Ruth and Naomi went together? Ruth gave up her homeland for Naomi and they journeyed together. At the beginning of Ruth's married life, it probably wasn't the plan that she had in her head. Presumably her plan would be for a long, happy marriage with her husband, for children, for staying in her homeland. But quickly that dream disappeared, but that did not mean that God disappeared from that dream. He kept going with her. He kept working for the good in her circumstance. He does the same for us. Like for Ruth and Naomi, that may not be the picture we had in our head as we started out the journey, but I know that God works for good in all things. And sometimes that is really hard to see, like really, really hard to see, and it just brings more and more questions. But my prayer is that if you are going through a tough time and you have no idea where God even is vaguely near that situation, I pray that you will just trust him enough to get through it with him and to look back and to see how he has worked in surprising ways. I think that Ruth and Naomi would have looked back and seen that he'd worked in really surprising ways. And our third and final point for this morning is that nobody is insignificant, no matter how we feel or how many others we see around us. For this, we need to jump to the end of the passage, the bit that I let Simon off reading, because there's so many horrible names in there. So if you've got your Bibles open on Ruth 4, then you can flick to the end. I have no idea what page that is. 269, thank you. So you can just have a look at the end. And if we had read it, I think most of us, if we're being truly honest, would just switch off when it comes to genealogy. I do. I start thinking about what I'm going to have for my lunch or something, because it just seems like a lot of names, a lot of people. I'm just a little bit bad at that. So essentially a family tree. So at this point, nobody is insignificant. Because Ruth, a Moabite and a foreigner, an outsider, gains a place in the family tree of David, which is then the family tree of Jesus Christ. Ruth, the Moabite, the foreigner, the non-Israelite, the woman who, at the beginning of the story, probably worshipped a different god, is placed in the center of the family tree of Jesus. And we see that in the beginning of Matthew's gospel. If you were here at Christmas at midnight and you are unlucky enough to remember that I preached on the women in the genealogy, it shows us that women were just never included in genealogies. And then in Matthew 1, the beginning of Matthew's gospel, there are four women named, and Ruth is one of them. Ruth, the insignificant Moabite, is in the family line of Jesus Christ, the ultimate kinsman redeemer. I wonder if that's what Ruth saw when she looked forward in her life. I don't think it would have been. I think she might have had a very different picture. But we know that God redeems, that God works for the good, and God uses each one of us, no matter how insignificant we are or feel. Because she ended up as one of the most crucial points in the just most crucial family tree in all of human history. The God who placed Ruth in that family tree has placed you where you are now. And it may not, in fact, it will not mean that you're going to be like a great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother of Jesus Christ. But he has placed you somewhere that he meant to place you. He has given you a community to do that with. And he has redeemed you to make you just perfect in his eyes. Because Jesus Christ shows each one of us the same love, if not more love, than Boaz showed Ruth. So earlier on, I asked you what it would be like if we felt like redeemed people, if we knew it in our gut, if we knew it inside, if we knew that we had life and had it to the full. What would our lives look like if we deeply knew whose we were? What would our church look like if we deeply knew whose we were in our gut? In a minute, the children are going to come back in and then we're going to sing a song and do a prayer activity together. But just for 2 minutes now, as maybe the band could come back up, that would be grand. I just want you to take a few minutes just by yourself to remind yourself that you have been redeemed and rescued by Jesus Christ. Just remind yourself in your gut what that should look like and what that should feel like. And just pray and thank God maybe for being your kinsman redeemer. So like Boaz redeemed Ruth, Jesus Christ has redeemed you. So let's just have a minute of quiet just as you reflect and pray to God about that.